He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles. And as you know, I am an avid watcher of the TV show Billions. So when Magic Johnson orchestrated that press conference to undercut his so-called sister Jeannie Buss and the very team he has symbolized for decades, the Lakers, was Johnson perhaps pulling an axe-like coup? You know, trying to sabotage the Lakers and further weaken their brand and eventually force Jeannie to sell the team to him. I mean, you heard Magic on ESPN.
If the Lakers were up for sale tomorrow, yes, I'd be running up to Jeannie and say, let me buy them. And I think, listen, the list would be long. And of course, Kobe would want to buy them. And if LeBron was not a player or out the league, he would want to buy him. I mean, listen, it's a gold mine. The Lakers are a gold mine. Even with us not making the playoffs, do you know we've sold out every single season? Listen, we were up 31% viewership with LeBron. We're still the number one in selling jerseys this season, the Lakers.
So
it's a gold mine.
One problem there, Irvin. Why would Jeannie ever sell to you when you just dropped a bomb on her? And a bigger question, if Magic was lame as the team president, might he be an absolute disaster as team owner? And speaking of Billions, can you imagine the jostling and the undercutting and the backstabbing if groups for Magic, Kobe Bryant, and LeBron James are vying to buy the Lakers? I would put my money on the shrewd one, and that would be Kobe Bean Bryant, except, oh my God, his good friend is Rob Pelinka! Ah!
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18, you know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
If Giannis Antetokounmpo is actually intimidated by Drake, who has been taunting the Bucks in much more animated and annoying ways than Spike Lee ever has in New York, then maybe Giannis isn't quite ready to win an NBA title. Yes, there's no doubt the rapper and so-called global ambassador of the Raptors is acting like an ass when he literally gets in Giannis's face and heckles him from his courtside seat in Toronto as that security guard beside Drake lets him act as he pleases. And I thought Canadians were tame and peaceful people, right? Not clowns. But the great athletes never let anybody see them sweat. And as Antetokounmpo continues to miss free throws and the Bucks continue to look awful in their two Toronto losses, Giannis does become vulnerable now to criticism about his emotional toughness or lack thereof. Listen to Reggie Miller, a courtside target of Lee back in the day, rave about Drake's nonstop heckling on the TNT broadcast with old scholar Marv Albert.
I'll tell you what, Drake is stirring stuff up out here, and I'm all here for it. He has been in Giannis's ear these whole two games.
Reg, he thinks he's responsible for the two air balls by Giannis.
The regular season, 73%.
Drake enjoying himself, yes.
Oh, I'm loving it. Oh, Drake.
I don't think Giannis has Drake on his playlist.
And Giannis wasn't helped a bit when a senior executive for Octagon Basketball Europe, which represents Giannis, tweeted this about Drake's nonstop trolling. Quote, imagine a gig and an athlete on VIP seats right next to the band stands up on the stage just to show off during the entire game, knowing cameras are on him, security and him both allow it. Never seen anything as disrespectful as this before, end quote, kind of garbled there. That coming from one Georgios Dimitropoulos, Giannis's former European agent. That was not a good idea to send that tweet, as that just launches, yep, the Euros are soft rap. Giannis has avoided that so far. He does not need that on his ledger. He has been exposed as ordinary the last couple of games. He commits turnovers, misses free throws, isn't dominant down on the block, as the Raptors are getting much better play on both ends from Marc Gasol, another Euro. Giannis also isn't getting enough help in these Eastern Conference Finals, as Eric Bledsoe is getting killed by Kyle Lowry, and the Bucks bench is being outplayed by Norman Powell, Serge Ibaka, and Fred VanVleet, who are thriving while all of Milwaukee's attention is on Kawhi Leonard. The Raptors won without Kawhi as a one-man gang in Game 4, and Coach Nick Nurse did get him enough rest, where I think Kawhi will be fresh in Game 5 Thursday night. Here is Giannis trying to stay composed with that series tied at 2.
We've been playing good basketball, you know, the whole year. Obviously, if you lose one or two games, you know, it's not the end of the world. We realize, you know, where we are right now, we realize the opportunity that we have, but at the end of the day, you know, we good habits, you know, all season long, so we're not going to lose, you know, our confidence. We're going to keep believing our habits, you know, keep trusting one another, and it's going to take care of itself. At the end of the day, if we do the right thing, you know, we still believe in our habits and we still trust one another, and it doesn't take care of itself. You know, we did our job. And that's what it's all about.
I still have faith in Antetokounmpo. I say he reaches down, returns to form at home. But even if the Bucks do survive the series in 7 games, that final victory would come Monday night with only 72 hours before Game 1 of the finals. I know Game 1 would be at home for either Toronto or Milwaukee, but the Warriors, if you haven't noticed, are great on the road. Meanwhile, all the Warriors are getting is valuable rest right now, 9 days worth, while Kevin Durant, Boogie Cousins, Andre Iguodala, and even Steph Curry's middle finger continue to be treated for injuries. Now, is it possible Durant will not play in Game 1? Yes, it's possible, with his manager, Rich Kleiman, casting some doubt about Durant's calf injury, while also giving a status update on Durant's free agency future. That is, Durant is undecided. What did you expect Kleiman to say? And by the way, as you listen to Kleiman, $250 million awaits Durant on July the 1st. You think Kleiman is going to tell Kevin, yeah, go ahead, go hard every game in the NBA Finals? Don't be shocked if Durant sits out Game 1, and if they were to lose the game, then he'd be back for Game 2. I think both the team and Durant are playing possum here. I don't think he has a healthy calf, but in a week, I think it'll be fairly healthy, and he probably could play in Game 1. My guess is he will not, as the Warriors say, hey, we haven't needed him yet. We're 6-0 without him, and everybody says we play with more joy and more freedom, and Steph is Steph again. I think that's what's happening. Anyway, here is Kleiman doing an interview with the Wall Street Journal.
What you're saying is that this has not been decided. There's no hidden handshake agreement.
No.
With the New York Knicks?
No.
No, nothing like that?
No.
Okay. All right.
That is 100% undecided, and I'm waiting on Kevin, you know? That's the truth. I think there's a feeling that this thing is like war games, and everybody's kind of like...
playing a role.
Yeah, playing chess, like, years out, but... when somebody gets to the level of basketball that he's at,
yeah,
you can't juggle focus like that. There's so many things he's juggling, too. He's not scripting his future while he's playing the way he plays and practices the way he practices. And I think it's frustrating, honestly, at times. But I get it. I do get it. I get that, like, even as a kid, the kind of soap opera of it all was just beginning, and I liked it. Now, I think in some ways it's like more soap opera at times than basketball, but he really doesn't know, and I really don't know.
How's his health?
His health is good.
He's, are we going to see him in the finals, do you believe?
Do I believe? I don't know. I honestly hope so.
Yeah.
I honestly hope so. But again, like, when you have an injury that's real, and it's a real injury, for him, like, he's got to be Kevin Durant. So he's got about the highest pain threshold of someone I know. So when he misses time, it's because the injury is real. It's a real injury. And I hope that we can see him next week or 2 weeks from now.
As for Kawhi, the owner of a Toronto condo company says he will provide Leonard with, get this, a free multi-million-dollar penthouse if he does sign long-term with the Raptors. Now, if the dude also could provide sunshine and 75-degree weather 6 out of 7 days all year long, as Leonard will have in L.A. with the Clippers, then maybe Kawhi would stay in Ontario. I think he's coming to the Clippers. Get your season tickets now. I'm going to. I'll go watch. I would rather buy season tickets to see Kawhi and the new Clippers than old LeBron and the dysfunctional Lakers. And I am not alone. More on the champs shortly, but I do remain distracted by the folly of the Lakers. Did you see where Pat Riley hinted that he might have considered a return to the Lakers, but that nobody reached out to him? Riley would be the perfect repairman. He would tell everybody to stay the hell out of the way, including Jeannie, but apparently all of Jeannie's inept friends and yes people have no interest in a man who did build championship teams as an executive in Miami after coaching the Showtime championship teams in LA once upon a time. And, oh, I wonder why. Maybe Jeannie's ex-fiancé Phil Jackson can't stand Riley, going way back to those Knicks-Bulls wars of the 90s. I also keep thinking about the late Jerry Buss this week, and what might he be thinking of the ongoing internal debacle? Remember, Magic was like a son to Jerry Buss, but Johnson just annihilated an organization that has been run into hapless oblivion by Buss's daughter. Would Jerry maybe thank Magic for publicly imploring Jeannie to get her act together as the lead owner to stop depending on unqualified people to make important decisions? Would Jerry maybe thank Magic for ratting out an alleged backstabber in the house, the general manager, Pelinka? Or would Jerry, and this probably would happen, disown Magic for embarrassing his daughter? It's always about family. Look, you don't have to like how Johnson plotted to burn down the house, showing up on TV, orchestrated, hijacking the Lakers same-day press conference with new coach Frank Vogel. And certainly, Johnson has his warts in all of this, including a very big mouth that did a lot of the leaking to his favorite media people, in fact, about his willingness to give up almost the entire roster for Anthony Davis in that failed joke of a trade attempt. Go check out the articles by Broderick Turner in the LA Times at that period. That's one of Magic's guys. And you'll see the Times had all those stories about, well, now they're offering this and 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 this. Hey, that was Magic. Hey, I'm upping the ante here. Meanwhile, Dell Demps was doing the same in New Orleans. Neither man has his job anymore in one of the infamous trade sequences, I should say, infamous failed trade sequences in NBA history. Face it, Magic never should have been given the president's position if he wasn't going to be firmly committed to the time and the effort required. But in the biggest picture of all, the window of perception, Magic does have the credibility of being an all-time basketball legend. He was among those who helped save the NBA when it was teetering. Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, and all the rest of these people remaining with the Lakers have no cred. He's the one who won the championships. He charmed the masses with his marketing smile. He overcame HIV. He's the one who has the backing of African-American players around the league and many African-American broadcast analysts. Remember, this is a predominantly African-American league. You cannot avoid the racial overtones when it comes to Magic versus Rob Pelinka. So-called backstabbing agent, former agent, versus legend. Magic Johnson, business legend, basketball legend, sports owner, humanitarian, HIV survivor. Yeah, that's how it works. And he also has the support, this surprises me a little, of LeBron James, whose partners said they liked how Magic handled the ESPN interview. I wonder what Rob Pelinka thinks about that. Pelinka, technically, LeBron's boss, yikes. Recalling how Magic was the one who showed up at LeBron's Brentwood home last July the 1st and recruited him. As for Pelinka, he is stuck with the perception, if not the reality, of being an untrustworthy ex-agent who now is running the front office of what once was a regal American sports franchise. Instead of hiring Magic, yes, Buss should have brought in a successful, highly regarded basketball person to run the show. R.C. Buford, Sam Presti, throw money at them. She has all the money in the world. And when Johnson resigned, she absolutely should have followed the same path. But Jeannie simply is not a strong owner. She's a weak owner. Instead, she listened to her longtime BFF, Linda Rambis, and her husband, the odd interloper here, Kurt Rambis. And of course, she listened to her ex-boyfriend, Phil Jackson, who is embalmed in Montana somewhere, and to two of her younger brothers, and the business boss, Tim Harris, and the ex-agent, Pelinka, none of whom have any clue, along with the clueless Jeannie, of how to actually run an NBA franchise. So what's next? Seems the mess only gets worse. Do you trust Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss making deals? Now, James is going to use this dysfunction as an excuse about why big-name free agents will not be joining him with the Lakers. He's going to say, well, it's so dysfunctional here, nobody wants to play here. So he's going to wiggle out of that. But, I mean, come on. Nobody wants to play with LeBron James either. He's toxic. Jeannie's toxic. Pelinka's toxic. They're all thrown together in this mess. And eventually he's going to say, I'm pointing my finger at you, Pelinka, at you, Jeannie. Get me out of here. I want a trade. That's obviously going to happen at this point because he does not want this LA experience in his basketball twilight to be doomed like some bad, dismal movie. And you're already seeing people close to him, unnamed sources, saying they're concerned that the negativity surrounding this franchise will chase away those free agents. So LeBron is going to use that as an alibi. At the Vogel news conference, LeBron could have spoken to the media. Instead, as usual, he distances himself from the whole thing, stands in the corner, doesn't take questions, instead of taking charge in tough moments. You saw during the season, he distanced himself from teammates on the bench. That's LeBron. He's not a leader either. There is no leader in the house. If Kurt Rambis is making decisions about Frank Vogel, Kurt Rambis is making decisions? No leaders down there whatsoever. And if you thought this past season and this current offseason were wacko, just wait. Wait until July the 1st when no free agents sign here. They've got to scramble to sign tier two free agents. And then training camp when LeBron's going to be unhappy with the team around him. And then maybe he gets hurt, maybe on purpose, early in the year. And then they're 10th in the Western Conference. And then he demands a trade. And there is no trade clause there, and they could trade him. Now, maybe they don't want to trade him right now, but in the end, getting him out of here as he turns 35, sourpuss, and all of his people around him, you think about what you could get in return possibly? Yeah, you would trade him. Problem is, I don't know many teams around the league who are going to give you a huge return at this point for aging Hollywood-struck Magic Johnson. Sourpuss Magic. I don't think Danny Ainge might, maybe not. The Warriors, would they think about it? Well, God, would that be a mess? I'm not. You know what? Today, I'm not even going there. We have to actually talk about teams that qualify for the NBA Finals, right? With a blurry 179 points in his last nine halves of basketball, Wardell Stephen Curry reannounced his place in American life as if he ever had to. We have been reminded of his magic, his charm, his swagger, and his preeminence as the madman scorer, the dazzling entertainer, and the generational talent who revolutionized the game and gives sports the down-to-earth megastar it needs. If that's a mouthful, it's true, as he established beginning with those 33 points in the second half of the Houston clincher before producing the most dominant playoff series of his career in the Western Conference final sweep of Portland, all of which was done with that dislocated finger on his left hand. If you're wondering, where has that Steph been? Well, it's no coincidence Curry did his work minus the injured Durant, underscoring Curry's selflessness in relinquishing control of the basketball and the offense to begin with while making way for Durant's all-time scoring skills throughout these three seasons. You know how unusual and even shocking that is for a superstar in this day and age? Social media, megalomania everywhere, Durant, Kyrie Irving, everybody's ego out of whack, and Curry accepts Durant and takes a lesser role. He could have been a bratty diva when that team contingent pursued Durant in the Hamptons after their 2016 finals loss, but Curry understood Durant's services were required to make a dynasty run, and they were, and here they are, on the doorstep of their fourth in 5 years, which hasn't been done since the Celtics way back in the 50s and 60s. And when Durant, who was on a historic scoring surge of his own, departed the postseason with that calf injury, Curry did revert to his two-time MVP form by putting the Warriors on his back. And they haven't lost since. And along with Draymond Green, who seemed to finally become an adult before our eyes and raise his multi-pronged game and leadership to unprecedented levels, Curry told us what he's all about, team first, and this team lifted by his spiritual guidance and his leadership, always has been. When Draymond and Durant were fighting back in November, after Draymond called Durant a bitch, quote-unquote bitch, three times during that on-court mess, Curry went to visit both of them. Curry was on the injured list. He went over to Durant's house, and he went over to Draymond's house, and that got the thing repaired. Here is Steph, maybe the next president of the United States.
I mean, obviously the situation called for more aggressiveness. The way KD was playing up until, you know, the time he got hurt, you know, we had a certain balance and a certain look as a team. And I think every guy took the challenge, you know, when he went out to step up and play a little bit more aggressive. Myself, you know, Draymond, what he did in the series is unbelievable. You know, Clay on both ends of the floor. And then the collection of bench guys and role guys that really helped us in the series. Everybody knew what the challenge was, and every game we hit the reset button and knew it was going to be another dogfight. No matter what the, you know, score was, how many points we got down, play 48 minutes. And I think we just play with confidence. We've been here before and have been through a lot of different experiences, and, you know, championship mentality showed down the stretch tonight, and just find a way to get it done in advance.
This also was a conquest for Steve Kerr, who did some of his very best coaching work in bringing to life his original team motto, strength in numbers. Everybody contributed in that Portland series, and the end of the Houston series for that matter, even players that casual fans didn't know much about. And the fact Curry, Green, Klay Thompson, Iguodala raised their games and stayed together through Durant's injury, well, it's a tribute to Kerr's culture. And they haven't had DeMarcus Cousins either. Kerr is four wins away from becoming the first coach since Red Auerbach to win four titles in 5 years, which is astonishing in that before taking the Golden State job, Kerr never had been a coach on any level.
I hope it doesn't go unnoticed or underrated. You know, five straight finals hasn't been done since the 60s, since Bill Russell's Celtics. Hasn't been done for a reason. It's really, really difficult. And so I just can't say enough about the competitive desire of the group of players that we have here and the culture that they've built together. You know, playing together regardless of injury. You know, we've had you know, being without Kevin these last five games has put us in a really tough spot, and our guys stepped up in a big way. You know, a couple of years back, we were without Steph for over a two-year period. I think he missed like 12 playoff games, and we won 9 of them. So the group has a fiber to them where when guys go down, they find a way to come together and compete and win. Starts defensively. If you can defend at a high level in the playoffs, you always have a chance. I just think the experience of winning titles helps you in these moments, and it helps you continue to move forward and come away with victories like tonight.
Curry also paused to pay tribute to the achievement, though knowing the importance of remaining focused.
I mean, it's really hard. We understand, one, how hard it is to win a playoff game versus, let alone a series, and sustain this level of success. I mean, honestly, even after 2016 and having that, terrible feeling in our gut walking off the floor, being able to bounce back and just have that resiliency. And I think the way that we play, we don't take anything for granted. Every single night, especially when you get to the playoffs, there's a hunger about us. And whether we win or lose, we take pride in how we play. And, 5 straight finals and the historic nature of what that is kind of crazy to think about. We want to enjoy it. We know 4 more wins defines your season. Winning a championship, so gotta stay locked in.
The next week will be noisy with Steph lovers / Durant haters preferring Durant stay on the sidelines in the finals so that the joy, the unity, the love, and the freewheeling offense will carry on. And I do get that to a degree. It's easy to love this team without Durant, and it's easy to resent this team with Durant. The line is that fine. But again, as I've said repeatedly, this team does need Durant in the next series, at least at 80%, to win another championship. As I said, we've seen flaws from the Bucks and the Raptors, and you're thinking this is going to be a breeze for the Warriors. No, I think both of those teams are better than Portland. It will be up to Kerr to reintegrate Durant into the lineup, but considering Durant is the NBA's most complete player and a feared weapon for the ages, that is a very pleasant problem. Besides, they need to keep Durant busy and off social media, which is a hopeless cause at this point. The other night, a fan named Mikey celebrated the Golden State win, sweep, writing, quote, "Doubt us without KD. Doubt Curry, Clay, and Dre, and keep thinking Milwaukee is better. Y'all doubters and haters will see." End quote. Pretty harmless, right? Of all people, Durant responds to Mikey under the tag Easy Money Sniper. Quote, "Very divisive, Mikey. Let's celebrate this win as Dub Nation, then an expletive, wrong with you." Durant's at it again. What does he do at night? I can only imagine. Is he having a glass of wine, or maybe a little more than a glass of wine? And then what are you doing? Why are you bothering with the Mikeys of the world? Durant also escalated a feud with Fox's Chris Broussard, who suggested the Warriors' success without Durant is Durant's worst nightmare. All right, a little embellished, okay, but that's what sports guys do on those debate shows. I was once one of them. Happy not to be anymore. When Broussard went on the air and then said Durant has been much harder on him privately, Durant got on social media and called Broussard a liar, which Fox Sports has to love. This is why Durant will be leaving the Warriors on the night of June the 30th. He feels unappreciated in the web of Steph Curry, and he has felt like the bad guy ever since leaving Oklahoma City to join the team he could not beat. It's unfortunate because Durant is hardly a bad guy in any way. Awfully sensitive, but not a bad guy. But hey, Steph Curry quite possibly is the most popular athlete in a land that likes to polarize elite athletes. LeBron, Tom Brady, Bryce Harper. Steph Curry is not polarizing, especially after this last series. very memorable stuff. I mean, after sweeping the Blazers, he exchanged jerseys and big hugs with brother Seth after their memorable, though one-sided, duel. Then Steph hugged his parents. Then Steph noticed Colin Kaepernick courtside in Portland and hugged him. Kaepernick obviously visiting Nike. That's his employer these days. Even though he doesn't play football or anything, Nike signed him to that lucrative contract. So Kaepernick probably picked up a big fat paycheck and then stopped by the basketball game. Look, never ever take this gift from the heavens for granted. And I mean Steph Curry, as Draymond Green said.
He's locked in, you know. There's so many people that was talking, oh, he can't do this, he can't do that. Like he isn't great. Like, he ain't the only unanimous MVP. Let's be real about this. So he's locked in, and it's taking our team to a different level.
All that's left now for Curry, win the NBA Finals MVP award, which would be his first. He has had some rough postseasons. I think this one is going to end triumphantly. And David Griffin continues to believe in world peace and the Tooth Fairy, thinking he can unite Zion Williamson and Anthony Davis for the long term in New Orleans. What's interesting is the new Pelicans basketball boss dropped the name of Rich Paul in expressing optimism, Paul being Davis's agent. This is the same Rich Paul who failed to orchestrate the Davis deal to the Lakers. Now Davis wants to stay. Check back here in 4 weeks, but keep in mind, Griffin, back in Cleveland with LeBron, had a good relationship with Rich Paul, also from Cleveland. I mean, he has been dealing with Rich Paul for a long time. That's why the Griffin hire was shrewd for the Pelicans. Still, check back in 4 weeks when Griffin has two loaded trade proposals from the Celtics and from Linda Rambis in L.A. I mean, you think Griffin is going to turn down a shot at, say, Jason Tatum, when the possibility exists that he could keep Davis for another year, but without a long-term agreement, Davis would bolt next summer, 2020, and leave Griffin high and dry without any compensation. So I still say Davis out of there. I don't think, even with Zion, Anthony knows he's not anywhere near a championship at this point. He'd rather probably kickstart that a year in advance, as we saw with Paul George, as we have seen with Jimmy Butler and others in the NBA. And by the way, have any of them won a championship? Paul George, nope. Jimmy Butler, nope. Kyrie Irving, nope. Where's it getting them? And Davis wouldn't either. By the way, Magic Johnson says he would have targeted Kawhi and Kyrie in free agency, figuring Durant is either headed to New York or staying with the Warriors. Maybe Magic ran because he knew he was going to be shut out, because LeBron is going to be shut out, and Genie is going to be shut out. See, even when I talk about the Golden State Warriors, it always comes back to Lakers dysfunction. The NFL's policy for testing recreational drug use, as we've known for years, is a fraud. So confirms the outspoken and now retired Chris Long, who says he could not have coped with injuries and daily stresses without using marijuana. Hoping the league will approve medical weed use, Long said he routinely beat the detection system because the league makes it real easy. The test is only once a year on a pre-arranged date. So Long and other players simply stop using the drugs in preparation for the test, then resume use after the test. So I'm going to assume at least half the players in the NFL use recreational drugs on a fairly regular basis for most of the year, which means even if the league continues to dawdle about officially legalizing medical weed use, only recently forming a joint committee to study the issue, this is still a wink-wink thing. Regardless, if you pass the hokey off-season test, then you can use drugs the entire season, as many, many players are doing. Just wanted to remind you of that. Thank you, Chris Long, for the reminder. From Regal leader Patrice Bergeron to gadfly Brad Marchand to defenseman Charlie McAvoy to goalie Tuukka Rask, the Boston Bruins always have had the core talent to win multiple Stanley Cups. Injuries have taken a toll in recent years, especially on defense, but the depth created by the front office has carried the Bruins to the Cup Finals, and give credit to Coach Bruce Cassidy, who took over a lifeless team 2 years ago and pushed the Bruins to the brink of a championship after last winning it all in 2011. The Bees will be heavy favorites over the lovable St. Louis Blues, who, this is a crazy story, had the league's worst record on January the 3rd, not all that long ago, when general manager Doug Armstrong made his own coaching change, as so many NHL teams do, appointing minor league coach Craig Berube as the interim. At that point, the hockey analytics site Money Puck had the Blues' odds of winning the Cup at 0.6%. Almost instantly, the Blues responded, winning 11 straight and losing only 10 of their next 45 games. And they have been blistering in the postseason, keeping their poise after that bad officiating call in the Western Conference Finals to beat the potent Sharks in six behind the rookie goaltending revelation, Jordan Binnington. I know Bruins Sharks would have been sexier. I think Barry Melrose would have loved it, but the Blues have not been in the Cup Finals since 1970. It's a cool story. Count on Marchand to wreak havoc, such as licking the opponent's faces. But the eve of the Cup Finals strangely finds him introspective, really?
You know, I think when you're part of a team like that, you do expect it to last a long time. You don't realize how one change in a team can really drastically affect how things play out. You know, one player change or, you know, one injury, one call, you don't realize what it takes to get back to the finals and how fortunate you are to get there. So, this time around, I think I'm definitely more appreciative of being here and I realize how hard it is. But at the same time, a lot more calm, I guess, in a way. At the end of the day, it's just hockey, and we've done it a million times, so we're just going to go and try to do what we've done all year and be in a good place. But it's fun, that's the other thing. It's exciting. We may never be back here again, so got to enjoy it.
The Bruins have been off for so long, they're actually holding a public intra-squad scrimmage. It's a novel idea. If you love underdogs, I would be rooting for the Blues, though I say they'll be singing the Blues after Boston wins in six. For now, all of St. Louis is hooked on the locker room theme song, Gloria, I think I got your number. That would be the 1980s pop classic, Gloria. Why Gloria? Just after Berube was hired, three Blues players visited a private social club in Philadelphia called Jack's NYB. The DJ that night happened to be playing Gloria. And Robert Bortuzzo told Alexander Steen, quote, this is our jam. So they started playing Gloria in the locker room after victories. And so the signature song of Laura Branigan, who passed away in 2004, suddenly has new life. To baseball, where even Mr. Met is holding his nose. The Wilpons are another family operation doomed to permanent futility, and the Mets are reflecting ownership's ineptness with too many chaotic situations to count. The manager, Mickey Callaway, is in way over his head, with the Mets managing three hits last weekend as they were swept by the pathetic Marlins. Three hits all weekend. Yet the new GM, another former agent, Brody Van Wagenen, actually gave Callaway a vote of confidence instead of replacing him with, Joe Girardi. Patience, is not the best virtue in New York sports, especially as the Yankees continue to thrive with a literal all-star team on the injured list, including Giancarlo Stanton, who is going to stay on the injured list. Hell, he could probably stay on it till October at this point. No, not really. The Mets traded away top prospects in the offseason, but one of the arriving veterans overpaid Robinson Cano, coming off a PED suspension in Seattle, didn't even run out of ball in what became a double play in that Miami series. And the Wilpons, they claim to have a $158 million payroll, but that is actually $125 million, which is unforgivable in that market. because $33 million in insurance checks from the David Wright and Cespedes injuries did not go into the payroll, but into the Wilpons' pockets. And Cespedes, their highest paid player at $29 million this season, already on the injured list. He broke his ankle when he stepped in a hole on his horse ranch last weekend, an activity he should not have been performing while rehabbing. Van Wagenen must be wondering why he even left the agent business. He was CAA's top baseball agent, just like Rob Pelinka. He must be wondering the same thing. Because the Mets, as long as the Wilpons are in charge here, owning the team, are the wrong owners in the wrong market for a team that had its run a few years ago and now looks like you-know-what in Flushing. You know what? And something stinks in the case of Dodgers pitcher Julio Urias. He has been reinstated by Major League Baseball, which placed him on 7-day administrative leave after an arrest related to an alleged domestic violence incident at a Los Angeles mall. But when mall officials declined to release a video that may have captured the incident, which allegedly contained footage of Urias pushing a woman, MLB quickly let the pitcher off the hook. Both Julio and the woman said no physical altercation took place. And if that is true, why did Major League Baseball shoot first with the suspension and ask questions later? Shouldn't MLB wait to assemble all pertinent information before making any ruling? And why didn't the mall give up the video? Oh, I don't know, maybe because mall officials are Dodger fans? What it comes down to in these cases is whether the alleged victim wants to press charges, whether an incident took place or not. In this case, the woman did not want to press charges. In the case of Cubs infielder Addison Russell, his wife at the time did want to press charges, even though he was never arrested, and Russell served a 40-game suspension. So it's all guesswork by Major League Baseball, and that is dangerous territory because Commissioner Rob Manfred might be unfairly ruining reputations, if not lives. And it's fair to say Bryce Harper, for his $330 million, never will be the consistent wrecking ball that Mike Trout is. Harper again is slumping in his first season with the Phillies, as he did in his final season in Washington. And while you'd be foolish to call him a bust, the teams that avoided him in free agency are looking a little smarter right now. Then again, the Phillies, despite Harper's inconsistency, are in first place in the weak National League East, and the Nationals are stumbling and ready to blame it all on manager Davey Martinez. Would they actually consider trading Max Scherzer at the deadline? Somehow the Nationals are even more embarrassing than the New York Mets. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, you have absorbed all of these weeks and months of Lakers buffoonery. Do you agree that Magic Johnson purposely scheduled his Sabotage the Lakers interview on ESPN so he could further poison Jeannie and her brand and create a better opportunity for him to buy the team later? Did Magic have an ulterior motive?
Well, Jay, I think his primary motive was to tell his story and embarrass the Lakers, embarrass Jeannie Buss, embarrass Rob Pelinka, and air out that dirty laundry. Make it obvious that Tim Harris, who is a name that 99.9% of the people didn't know and now do, which is not good for Lakers business because that's not really a name that should be out there, frankly. He shouldn't be involved in basketball decisions, or his job design wasn't. So that's what Magic wanted to do. He wanted to further add to the narrative and give a glimpse behind that it is a circus. It is buffoonery. It is a disaster. Palace intrigue's definition should be the Los Angeles Lakers currently. And that's really what he's getting at. Now, did he purposely schedule it on that? I don't know, because the timeline is, you know, Magic was going to be on First Take. They knew that for a while. So them scheduling, who scheduled first, I guess? If we want to go with the Lakers scheduled their press conference first and then Magic jumped on that, absolutely. I think that was his motive, to embarrass them. To set up to be able to buy the team later, possibly. I mean, I don't know any group of money, because it's not like Magic can afford that by himself. Even Magic and Kobe Bryant combined can't afford the Los Angeles Lakers. And AEG owns a percentage of the team, and they own, obviously, Staples and all that. And they have the right of first refusal to buy the team. So it's not going to be an easy process. If there's anybody who could somehow pull it off, I'm sure it's Magic Johnson. But if you're a capital firm or you're a big corporation that would invest in this partnership or this group to buy the Lakers, has Magic really proven to be the most amazing lead? What does come out of this and what the Pelinka press conference or the Vogel press conference showed was Magic's also been up to his own shade of backstabbing. His own telling Genie, no, I don't have any issues, and then, you know, gassing them on First Take on ESPN. That's not necessarily great for Magic's reputation. And you've seen really the last 24 hours hammer Magic's reputation. And Magic saying that he was very forthcoming about having other jobs, but yet, if you go back to when he took the job, he was 150% in. So it's been interesting to see how the story has turned a little bit.
And Chris, why doesn't Jeannie simply empty her very large bank vault and hire the best basketball Bigfoot possible, such as Pat Riley or Sam Presti or R.C. Buford, somebody who is not her ex-fiancé, her best friend or best friend's husband, a distrusted ex-agent or the janitor? I actually think Phil Jackson might end up here someday and take over.
I think that can be summed up as, I think there's two things here. Unlike Ballmer, and we'll use him simply because he's in L.A., or any of the other owners in the NBA or the NFL or any of the other leagues, Jeannie Buss and the Buss family, their business is the Lakers. They're living. They make a living based on drawing a salary off the Los Angeles Lakers. So Steve Ballmer is probably not on the payroll. He might get a little stipend. And obviously, they all get a piece of the profit, right? But as for, it's not Steve Ballmer's primary business. He doesn't need the Los Angeles Clippers to give him a check every week. And I'm sure Jeannie Buss has quite the fortune of her own. But my point is all those Buss kids, all the friends, the Linda Rambuses, all of the crew, and we all can only imagine the layers of that. They're all, their primary business, the way they make a living, is the Lakers. So for that to go away, if you gave the keys to Pat Riley and said, listen, I'm going to go off on an island, sure, you could still take a payroll check. You could still be a consultant on paper, but it might be more difficult to pull through. It might be difficult for somebody to look at the business operations and say, hey, why do we have 7 Buss kids on the payroll? What's the point? That, I think, is really where the definition of this being a family business comes into play. So it's more difficult. It also might just be that Jeannie Buss doesn't want to do that, that she doesn't want to give the power over to somebody where they have full control. Because again, in the press conference on Monday, Rob Pelinka clearly illustrated the chain of command now, which we really haven't heard. What was not clear in the Magic era was who made the final call. Obviously, that's what kind of tripped him up. So a Pat Riley, a Sam Presti, R.C. Buford, they're not going to want to check with Jeannie Buss on basketball decisions. They're going to want to make basketball decisions, and I think that's where the rub is.
And Chris, what is your take on Drake? Is he making an ass of himself, or is he simply being an effective troll? And if he wasn't Drake, don't you think he'd have been tossed out of the arena by now?
Well, if he wasn't Drake, I think he definitely would be tossed out of the arena. It's interesting. I don't know if he quite grasped what sort of a fool and a meme and a troll he's made himself out to be. Maybe he likes that attention, but I find it amusing. And this goes all the way back to who, I can't think of the female sports reporter or NBA reporter that he was in love with. Drake has made some good songs, some really bad ones, but he should stick to that. But guess what? He's excited, and they give him camera time, and social media explodes for Drake, and he's dancing around, and he's hanging out with the Raptor mascot and putting his hands all over people on the sideline. It's incredible. But how can we, with what goes on in the world, I mean, it's just par for the course, isn't it?
And the Warriors, Chris, feel free to gush over Steph while answering this. Does part of you want Durant to just stay away in the finals so the champs can preserve this joy?
Part of me wants KD to stay away simply to see what he will do. What will he tweet out? Who will he attack? Because you know it's bugging him. It's got to be eating him alive. This is a guy who had a burner account, Jay. Come on. So, of course, I want him to stay out during the finals. I want the Warriors to win this with just the great, as I once called him, Stephanie Curry, and his poetic way that he plays basketball, and the return of the Splash Brothers, and Draymond Green emerging as a hero while KD has to sit out. It's poetic justice, isn't it? And what it really does, and I think this affects Lakers free agency as well, there were a lot of people that said, listen, the Warriors are going to win this one, KD's going to leave, and then the West will be open. so the Lakers can get AD, they can get Kyrie, they can get somebody and be a powerhouse.
Uh-uh.
Lakers can get Kyrie, they can get Anthony Davis. That doesn't mean they're going to beat the Warriors. So now LeBron's last few years at the Lakers are less attractive to a free agent who's thinking, well, we're still not going to be able to get through the West. So why would I come to Los Angeles? Why not go to the Knicks? Why not go somewhere where at least I have a chance to get in the finals? But to bring it all the way back around, yes, I want KD to have to sit there from his Twitter burner account and tweet horrible things about the Splash Brothers and call Curry Stephanie before I do.
Thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that. Quick! Juwan Howard is the new basketball coach at Michigan, which means four members of those Fab Five teams have prominent jobs. Three of them are doing well. Howard, Jalen Rose on ESPN, my former partner, and Chris Webber on TNT. The other, Rob Pelinka, is not doing so well. See, it always comes back to the Lakers. Ah! And does Sonoris Perry follow the news at all? When the Buffalo Bills made number 32 available for the first time since 1977, the veteran running back eagerly grabbed the number, knowing full well it once belonged to O.J. Simpson. Said Perry, quote, "I know that greatness comes with that number," unquote. Coach Sean McDermott confirmed that Perry wants the jersey out of pride?
Yeah, it's something we did talk about when it was brought up by Perry, and we knew it was a number that was important to him and his family, and so we felt like we would honor that request, and we definitely vetted it out and talked about it.
Sonoris, have you seen the movies, the documentaries? Do you know the legal history of O.J. Simpson? And strange as it will be for the Yankees and the Red Sox to play two games in London next month, they also will be playing for the first time on artificial turf. Never in the Bronx on artificial turf, never at Fenway on artificial turf, but in London, yep, weird as that's going to be, it's going to get weirder with turf. MLB doesn't have enough time to install real grass, so 141,000 square feet of the old, hard ersatz turf will be transported from France and installed atop gravel. And clay for the pitcher's mound will come from Slippery Rock, Pennsylvania, while 345 tons of dirt is being shipped in 1840-foot containers from New Jersey, and fence padding is being shipped in from Montreal. Is it really worth the bother, Rob Manfred, when your sport is free-falling domestically? Fix your sport. And usually it's unfair when reporters don't want to be the news but are pulled into the headlines anyway. I know that feeling. Jeffrey C. Arnold of the Oregonian was minding his own business the other night when the Warriors, who traditionally form a huddle around a dancing Kevin Durant just before games inside the hallway, needed a new prop. So Curry, after using a basketball and a mop in previous games, grabbed Arnold, who was leaving the press room. Suddenly, more than any story he has authored in his 27 years at the Oregonian, Arnold is now known as the guy in the circle. Draymond Green decided to give him a prize for his services when Arnold asked a question after the clincher.
You was good luck today.
Draymond, can you talk about...
You was good luck today.
Are you guys going to fly me down for the finals?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'll hold you to that.
I'll pay for the ticket myself.
Let's get together after this is over.
Hey, Raymond, I got to buy his flight to the finals. Right here. I ain't paying for your hotel, though.
I can do that.
All right, respect.
All right.
At least Arnold was a good sport about it. I don't think I would have been. And because Arnold is an NFL writer who normally doesn't cover the NBA, he does want to take up Draymond on his offer to fly him to the finals. It's probably not ethical to take that money for the plane ticket, but Arnold says he will buy game tickets if Green provides the flight money. Look, I'm going to play editor here. If Arnold wants so dearly to see the finals, I say let him cover the finals and the Oregonian pays for it. There. It's called ethics.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet.
and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
According to gambling addiction statistics, more than 3% of the American population meet the criteria for problem gambling. That's approximately 7 million adults and 500,000 teenagers whose habits can lead to divorce, bankruptcy, homelessness, suicide. Yet, media companies frothing at the mouth to enter the legal gambling fray, including Fox Sports and ESPN, are completely ignoring that plague as they integrate gambling-related shows across their programming platforms. ESPN is building a studio inside a Vegas sportsbook. Fox is starting a real money betting app, Fox Bet. The Sinclair Broadcast Group, which just bought almost 24 regional sports networks, also is going full bore with gambling, which, when you think about it, is like a drug dealer giving heroin to an addict. But that's the thing here. Nobody is thinking at these sports networks. These henchmen are just trying to make money for Bob Iger and the Murdochs and maintain their seven-figure annual salaries, which finance their second and third homes. Never mind how they're enabling a disease. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody meet you in life.